I haven't had a job because I can't say my own name. I know it's stupid, but it hurts. I won't go into interviews. Once I got a job in a me factory, and they asked me my name, and I gave a wrong name, and I didn't go back there. I was only there for one day, and I didn't go back there to get me money because I was embarrassed out of my speech.
But people never looked at me when I had a bad stammer or block. They looked away, and I was looking away because I didn't want them to. I didn't want to see what they were seeing or whatever. I was very, very conscious of this. I was scared what they would see. So I kept on looking at the ground, looking at the wall, and not looking directly into their eyes. That was my problem, you know.
In school, I was teased a lot because of my speech, and people couldn't accept that I had a stammer, and I found that people who couldn't accept I had a stammer, they were beginning to like tease me a lot in school, and I especially hated when the teacher asked a certain person to read in front of the class, and that to me I felt quite nervous.
As far as I know, I have a stammer since I was around 3 or 4 years of age. My mother was a severe stammerer, and three of my brothers had a stammer as well. I went through conventional speech therapy when I was young in school. I didn't want to be there. It didn't do it any good. I left school at 16 because I hated it. I got teased and ridiculed nearly every day. So I left at 16 years of age to become an apprentice electrician because I figured that I didn't have to speak if I did a job like that on the shop floor. But I found out that I had to speak and use telephones and everything. And so anyway, I didn't really go for much therapy then until I went to America. I had therapy in America. It cost me a fortune. Magic cures did no good. Then I moved back to England, and I went for more speech therapy at 29 as a last resort because I knew that I could do something more. And the therapist actually told me there's nothing more can be done for you. And she referred me to a clinical psychologist. And he was the one that really changed me in that he didn't really know about stammering, but he said, I'd built up a wall around me, a barrier over many years, and you've got to chop that down. And he asked me to just mention to somebody at work that I'd been to see a speech therapist, and I said, I'll do that tomorrow. It took me 3 weeks, so I knew he was right. So then I went into therapy in a group in England, a group of four, an evening group. And from there on, I began to help her in the group, along with the speech therapist. And then she suggested maybe I go in to train to be a speech therapist at 33 years of age as a mature student. I came back to Ireland and formed the Irish Stammering Association and began to run these courses, the PATMAR courses for adults who stammer.
Children at around the age of 2.5 or 3 go through a normal stage of repeating sounds, like they might go, mama, mummy, can I go out? At this stage, it's very important for the parents to allow the child to just finish what they're saying so that the child doesn't feel that they have a problem, because, in fact, it's not a problem. They're just going through a very normal stage of language development. A child can start to stammer at this stage if the parent, for example, says to the child, slow down, or say it again, or take a deep breath. When we see parents in therapy with their children, we often have to talk to them about who has the problem, because often the child of 2.5 isn't aware that there is a problem at all. It's the parent who is worried and concerned about the child, is worried for the child's future, who feels that there is a problem. And the parent's anxieties can easily be carried over to the child, who can then start trying not to stammer. And by doing that, they may actually stop speaking altogether. They may start whispering, or they may start blocking. And by blocking, I mean they may try not to stammer. They may instead make a strangulated sound, which is more difficult at times to treat than the more repetitive sounds.
I realised I had a stammer at the tender age of 6, and this, I felt, it really held me back in a life.
I first became aware of my stammer when I was probably 7 or 8 years of age. I remember my grandmother saying to me, "I think about what you say before you say it." And that is my first memory of actually having a stammer. And I'm not sure whether it did me any good, because it meant I actually started thinking about my stammer.
Right. My one memory of developing a stammer is that, I, as far as I know, I spoke fluently till the age of four. I don't really remember a time I spoke fluently, but I know from my family that apparently I spoke fluently till the age of four. When I was four, I went to hospital to have my tonsils out. While I was there, I was slapped by a nurse for refusing to eat a pill, a little black and white pill on a blue plate, which I remember to my dying day. But after that, I developed a fairly bad speech problem. I stammered quite badly after that.
It was when I was a kid in primary school, about five, six, seven, 8 years of age. Reading in class, for example, once you get a paragraph to read in class in a book or whatever, taking turns, it was always a big problem for me to go forward to the first word of the actual paragraph. I'd look ahead to it and see if you could pronounce the actual word or not. And then if you couldn't, you would have a block, which is when you can't actually get the word out. So it was back then, and something's always been affecting me all my life. As I say, I was hoping it would improve as I grew older, but it never did.
And and teachers, you know, they felt sorry for me at the time. And I remember one of them once I got into a real serious stammer. I just he could sense the block. So his way of helping me was to hit me a hard pat on the back. I'd like to burst the air out, like, and just, but funnily enough, who worked on that situation. But my main memories as a kid was just the fear of losing control of my speech.
I got a slight in school. The teachers used to make me read in school, and I didn't want to, but they still made me do it. So I got me ma up, because any time I read, they all used to laugh at me, and I never liked it. And the other students, they all used to laugh at me, call me names, and they made me live in hell in school.
They were dumbfounded. They were surprised. They were embarrassed. They were even traumatized, I'd say, at some stages. I mean, they just didn't know what to do. This is a social disorder, you know, because if I hadn't to deal with people, I wouldn't have the problem.
Apparently, teachers don't get any training in their teacher training course about dealing with stammerers, which is absolutely wrong, because approximately 1% of the population has a stammer. That is 45,000 people. And our teachers get no training in how to deal with them.
I am already self-conscious. Even there in a group now, still reading or speaking in public is something which I have a great fear of. But a lot of it, I'm not sure whether it's the stammer, or whether the stammer has brought on my self-consciousness, or whether it's resulting in my lack of being so self-conscious. I'm not too sure. It's just, other people don't really see it. As I say, other people don't actually see this, but deep down in myself, like, it's kind of in turmoil yourself when you're being asked to speak in certain situations, or you're, like, even I remember years ago playing football, having team meetings and all. And before team meetings, or during team meetings, everyone would be kind of in a group talking, and everyone would be asked on their opinions on a match or whatever the next day. And I'd actually be so tense in myself before I actually had to speak, and be extremely self-conscious, and then I'd say as little as possible as well. So I think that as well is kind of, as regards my conversation, it's quite low, because you're that stammers, you just say as little as possible just to get away with it, you know.
The 25 years of hardship I had, that were very hard, where I'd be drinking on my own, and I'd be going into pubs, and I think about 90% of the people I wouldn't want to socialise with them in case I stammered. But there was always a certain category of person I talked to, you know. And I'd be there just actually drinking, and it was like a pattern, you know, for a lot of weekends. You know, you'd be drinking to feel you were a different person after you drank. And I obviously smoke a lot too. I smoke about 50 cigarettes a day, and I seem to use it as a prop for the speech also too. It's like if I smoke, basically, that it won't really relieve me, but it'll give me some type of a prop actually to stammering, you know, where I'll feel actually better if I smoke, or it'll try and give me a bit of relief. And sometimes I find it hard to walk into a room where there's 20, 30 people, we'll say a classroom or a function, you know, where you're there and you have to walk in. It's like a phobia of speaking, actually, you know, where you walk in and you're there and the fear of it all starts straight away, where you're confined in a room. And even if there's two or three people in the room, it's extremely hard too, you know.
Throughout my life, I had no, like, real understanding of it. It always got in my way. I tended to blame everything on it. I went to college. I qualified as a teacher. But I spent a lot of time on the dole and doing fast courses and kind of wasting my time. Eventually, I started working as a house painter, and that suited me as a stammer. It suited me that I didn't really have to speak very much. I was very busy and was self-employed, but I never had a telephone. I ran the local arts festival and never used a telephone. I was very functional as stammers go. I still think I was very functional, but it always upset me that I couldn't pronounce my own name, for instance, or I couldn't use a telephone or ask for something in a shop.
Most of them were kind of abused, I would say, in the childhood, by teasing in school, ridiculed as teenagers. It was that bad. They could no longer stick the abuse. So what they tended to do was to kind of take the stammer inside them, to hide it, internalise it. So because they didn't want to be stammering in front of people, because those feelings, probably real in some cases, even as adults, people would laugh at them. So they avoid words, they change words around, they avoid speaking situations, they make somebody else use the phone for them, maybe never use a telephone, they'd write things down and in shops instead of asking for them, and it's ruining their whole lives. I find it's a bigger problem for people who hide the stammer sometimes than people who really obviously stammer on nearly every word.
A normal thing would be, if I was going to shop and asking for something, I'd put two or three words in front of a certain word just so I could say something. Mixing words around, rearranging words, you know, scouring ahead of your reading to see if this word is there so you can, you know, replace it with a different word or put a filler or a starter in before or after it. Like even going to the bar, like just, you know, sort of ordering extra drinks or a different, it's probably an extra drink so you can say the drink that you want. Just silly things like this, or in the shop, buying extra things so you can get the thing that you want. Even like it came to a stage where some of the avoidance strategies that you had, you wouldn't do anything, you wouldn't talk to people, you became silent, just to avoid not speaking really.
One of the biggest fears for stammerers anyway is something that you've ordered all the time, because you've failed so many times. You're in a crowded pub and he couldn't say it. So he would go into a pub in Dublin and see if they sold Beamish. If they sold Beamish, he wouldn't go into it. He looked in the next pub, he looked at the bar. If they didn't sell Beamish, he would go into it. So he'd go to the barman and said, "Can I have a pint of Beamish?" Because he could say that. And your man behind the bar says, "Well, we don't sell Beamish, but we have Guinness. Will that do you?" He said, "Yeah."
The avoidance thing is just not using a telephone at all. You know, not use a telephone. I was sort of driving the car all day and drive somewhere rather than make a phone call. Some very simple things, even like going to the shop, or I would sit in a car and drive 5 miles to get a pound of butter rather than go to the local shop and ask for it off a shelf that I would have to ask them, you know. I've met better avoiders than me, but it was very frustrating. It was very time-consuming and frustrating as well. It was a big thing, you know.
People with covert stammers tend to be thinking ahead all the time, changing sentences around, changing words around, avoiding situations, and doing everything that they can possibly do not to be discovered as a person with a stammer.
When I joined the army in 1996, there was a lot of the training staff and a lot of the NCOs or the corporals and that had obviously no understanding of what a stammerer was. They just saw someone as being inferior, a bit of a retard. That sounds harsh, but that's honestly what I saw as. And I had a few friends that stammers in the army as well, and they were saw as that. So it made us all the more determined to succeed. And when we did succeed, you could almost see the tears in the eyes of the staff. They had saw us as slipping through the net, and they were, you know, angry that weak people like ourselves had managed to pass out of training, you know.
When I started working in a place called Liffey Meats, the boys started slagging me big time, making fun of me, calling me stammer. The boys started slagging me big time, and I got embarrassed over it. And so I came to three rows, fights over it, and I haven't spoken to a couple of boys, them lads, my own brother-in-law, since that.
I found that I was doing jobs that I was more than capable of doing and completing, and I thought I was wasting my time in a lot of the jobs because I could do better in other jobs, you know, only if I had the fluency. You know, I'd wake up out of my sleep in the morning time and I'd say, "Well, I wonder, will I stammer today, you know, and I'll have to work on it to improve myself. I know I have to do all this," I'd say to myself, you know, and you'd have to face the situations in the workplace. And I hope I haven't many problems in the workplace, I'd say, you know, and because it may affect my speech and that stuff, and I'll have to be equipped and ready. And there was another thought I'd have in my mind. It would be that I'd have to actually try and get on with everybody in the workplace, and I'd hate a conflict in the workplace, like a row in the workplace, or you know, but not getting on with people would be the worst thing that could happen to me in the workplace, I thought.
I have had some bad experiences at work, when like say for example a junior doctor interns would be ringing up looking for a result, and I would be stammering quite bad, and I'd hear them talking to somebody else in the background, "Who's this bloody idiot?" on the phone, like, and I mean, obviously I'd hear it, and I've had a few of those sort of things. Another example was one of the at work. She rang up one day, and I answered the phone, and she asked specifically for somebody else. I took no notice of it, and just asked for the person. But then she was actually just asking a very general question, which even the most junior person in the lab would know. So then obviously I felt quite angry at the that, not solely because of my speech, but was actually affecting our, prejudice of somebody else was affecting work and taking someone else away from their job.
Certain times on the phone, there's certain words you find hard to pronounce, or you're dealing with a lot of people, and I find as well quite a few words in the IT world are hard to pronounce, like log, for example. Log on or log off, and which is a very important word in IT, like we're telling people to. So, for example, there you'd use other words like to restart a PC instead. You know, log on or log off would be probably a lot handier and quicker. So, when I'm dealing with people on a one-on-one basis, it's okay, but it's on the phone, you get caught on certain words on the phone. But as I say, I've used phones. I haven't got a fear of phones. I use phones quite a bit in personal life, obviously, and through work. It hasn't been a severe problem, but it is a problem for me at times.
When I was involved in therapy myself, and when I was a student, I helped out in a group. And there was he was a consultant psychiatrist. And one of the big problems he had, which a lot of stammers have, was using the telephone, especially picking up and saying hello. He couldn't do it. He had a phobia or a big fear against saying hello. So what a lot of stammers do, they put a word before it to get them going. So he might say, hello, and then he would get it out. But then that began to fail. So then he maybe put two words like, hello. But it went on and on. He got to a stage then where he just lost control altogether. And the phone used to ring. He would pick the phone up and he would say, hello. Of course, by the time he got out, the people had hung up on him.
In 1990, whenever I was about to leave high school, I stammered quite severely, and I realised I needed to go to some sort of therapy. That was 14 years ago. There wasn't a whole lot out there. So I went to hypnotherapy and attended that on and off for 6 years, 1990 until 1996. Years ago, especially 1996, when I went on my McGuire program, I was naive, I must admit, and I did think, hey, this breathing really works. I can never see myself stammer again. If I just keep up the breathing, how can I stammer? I didn't know then that my mental attitude had to change, and it was the most important. For without the correct mental change, the breathing, it doesn't matter what sort it is, will not hold up in the real world.
I did make an attempt previously to do something about it. I went on the McGuire program. I went to Bristol to to do the course. They basically taught a method. It was a breathing method, which works for a short period of time, but after a while, if you don't deal with underlying problems, like with the fear of stammering, that simply falls by the wayside after a period of time.
I attended a lot of speech therapy, and I felt that this didn't really help me, because they were dealing with different techniques such as heavy breathing, and that I felt it wasn't helping me at all. I attended a speech therapy on a number of occasions from the age of about 8 to the age of 14, and as I said, they didn't help me at all. to gain control of my stammer?
I tried different courses, like hypnosis, and I did a course called speech re-education. I did one-on-one therapy, but it no affected my speech at all, or sometimes short-term effect, you know. But and again, I was looking for this cure for my speech, that I would go from being completely disfluent to being beautifully fluent overnight, and it doesn't happen, you know, as an adult stammerer. No, I personally don't believe there's any cure for stammering. I think my own thing, I don't know if this is my own definition or someone else's, is that a stammer is the physical manifestation of a psychological disorder. And that's something, it took me some time to come to grips with that definition, but that's how I understand it. So I think you can learn these different skills to overcome the physical side of stammering. And I think stammerers need counselling to deal with the emotional baggage. I think I'll always have it with me, but I think as time goes by, I'm coming to grips with it more and more, becoming more fluent, becoming more in control. And I think that's the whole purpose of this course, is to learn how to control one's speech in any situation.
They have attended courses where they've been told that they would be cured. They're usually run by non-qualified people, both in Britain and Ireland. There's still courses running now. Paying, as far as I know, over €1,000 for 4 days, thinking they will be cured after it. In fact, I don't know of anybody that has been cured. In adulthood, I don't think stammering can be cured at all. To get people to understand why they're stammering or behaving the way they are, we kind of relate it to an iceberg, where maybe an eighth of it or one small part you can see above the water. And more importantly, the rest is hidden under the water. And especially with the covert stammerers, but this is for all stammerers in general, most of it, the emotional side, is all hidden. There's all stuff from the past that teasing, as I said, ridicule and all those things. And the kind of emotions that we hear from them, they have are embarrassment, shame, inferiority, why me, isolation, loneliness, stupidity and fear. All these things are all hidden under there. And because they're feeling all those things before they go into a speaking situation, those feelings, that as soon as you try and open their mouth, there's so much tension there because of that, that they just have blocks where nothing comes out, or they stammer on every word. So we kind of get them to work on the underlying issues. And then if you sort out the underlying problem, which is all those feelings of kind of negative emotions and low self-image, then you can start working on what comes out of the mouth.
I would have been covert at certain times in my life. I would have been covert, but then I became quite overt. I had no choice. I was doing so many physical tics. I used to scrunch up my face and clench my fists, and I would get amazing blocks. My speech would just, I'd seize up in a word. And for years, I just fall silent with my face clinched and fists clinched. In my late 20s, I developed this mannerism where I would not only clinch my face and fists, but I would emit this high-pitched whine, which I don't know where it came from, like, and that could go on for minutes, you know. And I traumatise a lot of people doing that to them. But, you know, that was one of my things. So I was quite overt about the stammer, but I avoided situations. I avoided speaking situations, and the frustrating thing about stammer is that at times I could be quite fluent. I could be very, very fluent, you know.
This course is a platform for change for adults who stammer. The main aims of the course are: one, that people learn to accept their stammers, and two, that people are able to control their stammers. The idea of the voluntary stammers is that clients are able to control their stammer for the first time ever. This course is not about making people fluent. There's been lots of courses in the past and that still are around today where the main emphasis is on achieving fluent speech. This course is different to most courses in that the people will still stammer at the end of the week, but they will have a way to control their stammer.
Most stammers, adults especially, have lost control of the speech completely. The speech is actually controlling them instead of them controlling it. And it's as if, say, your arm was just flailing around at your side and you had no control of it. That would send you crazy. So if you lose control of your speech, which is a big part of you, then what does that do psychologically? So what we do, we actually get them, maybe for the first time in 10, 20, 30 years, to actually gain control of the speech. And to do that, we ask them to stammer voluntarily. So they decide where, when they're going to put it in a stammer. Then they actually can feel that they can control what comes out of their mouth. The other part of that is what we call desensitization. They're actually admitting, A, to themselves, they stammer, which a lot of them have denied, and B, to other people, they're actually saying, look here, I have a stammer, but I can control it.
The voluntary stammering seems to be a good method. I got it very hard to get into in the first place. You know, I couldn't really understand its basis, and I was saying to myself, well, if I was always avoiding stammering in my life, I'm back just voluntary stammering again, you know. I can give you an example of how it works now. If you ask a question like, the day is quite nice out, but the sun hasn't come out yet. And it's actually used on words that you wouldn't usually stammer on. And the whole purpose of it is that you use it to actually slow down your speech and break the phobia of actually stammering. You know, your fear of it is actually broken down when you practice the voluntary stammering, you know, especially when you go into shops and try it in the outside world. You know, you approach a person in the shop and you actually voluntarily stammer to them and you look for a reaction and you keep eye contact with them. It's a therapy I've never really thought of, and I have actually tried a lot of things in my life, and it seems to be a very unusual therapy at the start, you know, but it's helping me along as a foundation, though, with other stuff I've tried in my life, you know.
At the moment, I am learning to gain control of my stammer and taking on board the different techniques to gain certain control of my stammer, such as voluntary stammering. And this, I feel, is going to help me a lot in a life.
Hi there, I'm I have a packet of 10 John Player Blues, please. Yeah. And have you any of the small Rennie?
Yeah, the peppermint or the spearmint?
The little small, the spearmint.
It seems that it is, you know, the little things, you know, the normal everyday things, like going into a shop and asking for a packet of cigarettes. The worst thing of all that a stammer has to face is he has difficulty saying his name. A stammerer avoids words. He changes words. He may have one thing in his head that he's going to say, and at the last second he will change it and say something else to try and fool his brain or his mouth or whatever to get a word out.
There is no cure. Control. If you can control your stammer, you will manage everyday life. Control is a word which has a lot of meanings, but control for me is when somebody asks me a question, I can answer the question. That's control for me.
It does not a cure for stammering. The only cure I know is to gain control of your stammer and let the stammer become your friend, and don't let it overtake you in life, and just to accept that that you have a stammer. So basically, I feel that my stammer will never leave me, but I just have to gain certain control of my stammer.
For perfection, it's to work for it to control the stammer as best I can overall, and to stay effectively communicating, and that's the goal, is to be effective, to ensure that I can actually stay in control of my speech as best I can. I did actually search for a cure before, and I expected it by sheer determination that I could get one, you know, but it's not going to happen to me. But until the day I die, I will always be a stammerer, because it's there. That's what I am. It's a fundamental part of me that will always stay with me, and that's okay with me. That's fine.
It probably wasted my life, really. You know, where people would say to me, parents and friends would say to me, "Why don't you stop all that stammering?" You know, and just come out of it. Like, it's a silly way to talk, really. And they'd say to me, "Why can't you speak the English language properly?" You know, without any stoppages or stammering, you know, and all that stuff. And I suppose they were trying to help me in a way and give me some type of encouragement, you know. And I often thought about moving to another country, to another town, to start a fresh life. But really, when you're a stammerer, it doesn't really solve any issue, because you're the one with the stammerer, or with the stammer, sorry, and you're going to have the stammer. And it's not going to change your life in any way. You'll be in the same boxed situation in your apartment or in your house or in your area you live in. You know, you're not going to change just because you leave a country to start a new life or anything. So it's very complex, actually.
Before the course, I would have been a fairly tense person, because I had to get on with life and basically ignore my stammer. Since losing the fear of stammering, all of that tension is gone. I'm a much more relaxed person. I talk to people a lot more. It's basically, I have lost the fear, so I've lost a lot of tension that I had in my life, and a lot of stress is gone.
There was a man that came to the course about 2 years ago, and he would have had a covert or a hidden stammer. And he was almost in denial of it himself, because nobody ever hear him stammer. And he actually never told his wife. His wife never knew he stammered at all. He used to hide it from her by all the kind of avoidance strategies and changing words and lots of other things. But it became a serious impact on his life, especially at work. He couldn't go for interviews, or he couldn't get promotion. A very intelligent man. And anyway, he plucked up the courage to come for an interview, but he would actually flail his arms around in front of him as a way of distracting people from any stammers, small stammers he would have. But anyway, he came on the course and he did really, really well. But then his wife came on the last day. We invite the partners and family members to come on the last day. And she was really upset because he had actually then admitted to her all the problems he had under the iceberg stuff, all the emotional stuff came out. And she was upset that he had told 11 strangers about all these problems he'd hidden from her for 11 or 12 years. But he just couldn't tell her. He was just too sensitive.
My name is... My name is Alex, and I'm from County Kildare.
My name is Stephen Kavanagh from Wexford.
My name is Cyril Butler. I'm originally from Leitrim, but I'm now living in Dublin.
My name is Frank Finnegan. I'm from County Cavan.
My name is Alan Mitchell, and I'm from Cork.
My name is Niall Michael Carr, and I'm from Donegal.
My name is Maria McDonald, and I'm a speech and language therapist in Sligo.
My name is Patrick Kelly, and I live in Leitrim.
My name is Brendan McGee. I'm from County Meath.
My name is Marco Sullivan from Cork.
My name is Chris Halliday from Bessbrook in Northern Ireland.
If you enjoyed this documentary, you might like to listen to our other Documentary on One productions. Visit rte.ie/docon1.